go!
And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go, F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-drive to survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in Margaret River in southwest Western Australia.
And I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-drive to survive Formula One fan, and I'm back this week. Di has someone to talk to this week, and I am in my my new home of Stavanger in Norway.
Oh, I've missed you, Mon. Don't do that to me again.
Oh,
welcome back.
Thank you. I'm so sorry. But for anyone that listens frequently, you would have heard that I was away on a cruise. First, I was away on a cruise and technology failed us. And then I was away on a cruise and you don't really get any reception on the far northern side of Svalbard. So it was a little bit too touch and go and risky to try and record.
We've held down the fort and now we're back to talk about the British Grand Prix. What a massively exciting race.
Oh, Di, I don't even want to talk about it. I'm exhausted just thinking about the race. Honestly, oh my God. Like, I've got an entire page of notes from the first 25 laps. I can't deal with some of the things that happened. I can't deal with how hectic it was. I mean, it's everything you want in a race, though, isn't it? You want a hectic race, so there's things happening, but
oh, my God. Yeah, there was a lot. And that's what I love about the British Grand Prix. Every year, it just delivers. Every year it delivers. It's such a good race.
Yeah, absolutely. We thank the weather gods for that hectic race. It was a wet race or a mixed condition race. And obviously, that means it's heavily reliant on strategy. Also heavily reliant on drivers' skills in the wet. And
yeah, right.
I don't even know where to start.
Well, let's start with the good news. Nico Hülkenberg. Oh, my good to see Nico Hülkenberg on the podium after 15 years in the sport and 239 races.
Oh, my gosh.
239th race. I know, but to do it from starting dead last in 19th on the back row,
yeah,
to finish in third, just
yeah,
so happy for Kick Sauber, so happy for Nico. It's Gabriel Bortoletto, my cousin, one team, not two, was just jumping out of his skin, just so happy for his teammate. Did you see him run through Park for May? Oh, did he? To get to the podium, to get to Nico to congratulate him. Yeah, well, it was very cute.
I just thought it was, I kind of loved that the attention wasn't on Lando Norris. Sorry, British fans. I'm so sorry. But that's another story that we'll get into. And there's a reason that this race. Anyway, just to see the attention that was on Nico. And then I think it was when they were filming Lando going past all the crew, and they were all so happy for Lando having won the race. And someone in that crowd of people was chanting, Nico, Nico, when Lando was right there. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. That guy is just absolutely reveling in it. Everyone was so excited for him. Even if whether you're a Kick Sauber fan or not, whether you're a Hülkenberg fan or not, doesn't matter. To see someone get their first podium, whether they've, you know, just started, like Kimi Antonelli when he got his first podium, or whether you've been doing this for 239 race starts. Because just beyond, like, elation, complete elation. And,
yeah,
you know, you got to be happy for
him. So nice to see. Oh, so happy for Nico. And so nice to see on all the social media posts, other drivers and other teams congratulating him as well. It just goes to show how much admiration and respect and camaraderie there is between him and the rest of the field.
Absolutely. And I did see, I think it was Aston Martin and Mercedes each sent champagne to the team, and they were shaking it up and chanting and singing. And I just thought that was such a beautiful move. Like, yes, celebrate everyone's wins. I mean, a podium is a win. So,
yeah. Oh, well, for Kick Sauber, it sure is. Yeah, it sure is. So I've got some fun facts.
Oh, okay, of course
you do. So Nico Hülkenberg is the oldest first-time podium finisher in over 50 years. He's 37 years old.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's still a spring chicken die.
Well, compared to Fernando, yeah, he is. Nico was also running in the top three for 19 laps, which is more than he's managed to do in the past 8 years combined. Mega, right?
I know. Brilliant.
And in the past four races, Nico has scored 31 points, which is more than Max Verstappen, who scored 29 points. And he's, yeah, yeah. Let that sink in. In the last four races, Nico has scored 31 points, more than Max Verstappen, the four-time world champion and current reigning world champion, who has scored 29 points.
Insane. Insane. That's just...
in a Kick Sauber.
Yeah.
I know.
And, you know, they, listening to all the commentary and everything during the race and post-race, you know, everyone was talking about Nico being such a wonderful guy, and he does just seem like a really humble, genuine, lovely man. And then also, he's a fast, good driver. He's just always had midfield machinery, which it's hard to do anything amazing in midfield machinery, because unless you have a race like we had this weekend at Silverstone,
everything gets mixed up and shaken up.
It's really...
you're always going to be in the midfield.
Exactly. It's really hard to put it up there in the top. And I mean, his teammate, Gabriel Bortoleto, your cousin, one T, not two, unfortunately didn't finish the race. And he wasn't the only rookie who didn't finish the race. There was the only rookie that finished the race. Congratulations to Oliver Bearman for managing to keep his car on the track. I think he did have a couple of little incidents, but managed to finish the race. All other five rookies, we're including Lawson in this, didn't finish the race. So it's a huge accomplishment for Bearman, huge accomplishment for Hülkenberg when his teammate didn't finish. Like, all around, great story. And in the famous words of Oscar Piastri, congratulations to Nico Hülkenberg. I think that was the story of the day. Let's focus on that.
I know, Oscar Piastri. Before we move on to him, a couple more fun facts about Nico.
Okay, sorry.
So Nico has gained his more than 10 positions in a race four times this season.
Twice in a row.
Yeah, and no other driver's done it more than twice.
Ooh.
So that's an awesome fun fact about Nico Hülkenberg. It's the first time since 2019 that he's scored in four consecutive races. It's Sauber's first podium since 2012.
I know, that's incredible.
13 years, that's a long time. Mm.
It's a lucky 13 for them, not unlucky 13.
And last year, the whole team only scored 4 points.
Wow.
In 2024. In 24 races, last year, they've scored 4 points. In 2025, we've had 12 races, and they've already scored 41 points.
That's
10 times
so good.
What they did last year. I know.
So good.
And you might not know, or listeners might not know, that Nico Hülkenberg won Le Mans in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So he has stood on the top step of the podium of the Le Mans race, which is considered one of the toughest races in the world, the 24-hour, and he did that with Porsche.
So he's demonstrated time and time again that he is capable of this. It's just put him in a car that's capable of it, and I think you'd see magic. Fortunately, he's always been in, like, not so great cars, but this year, slightly different story. Stakes doing well.
That's right. The Kick Sauber is doing really well, and that result for Nico has jumped the team from ninth in the World Constructors Championship up to sixth, which is great.
And they're not that far behind fifth. And fifth is Williams.
Williams is on 59 points and Kick Sauber on 41.
So that's
18 points in it. So the next big thing I want to talk about, yes, let's talk about Oscar Piastri.
Let's not.
Wow.
I just don't. I can't die. I can't.
You have to. That's your job.
But it hurts inside. Like, I'm just so conflicted. It's just so awful. I just can't.
I've never seen him so angry and so,
right,
showing so much negative emotion, like, never before. Oscar, everyone, including us, have said Oscar Piastri's cool, calm and collected.
Yeah.
Not at the British Grand Prix. He was furious. And
Last week at the Austrian Grand Prix, there was that moment where Gasly impeded him. And he said something about Alpine trying to him over still.
That's right.
And that was the first little glimpse I think we got at salty Oscar. And, you know, everyone was kind of shocked by that because it was a bit, how you going? That's not what we're used to.
No. This week. And I'd totally forgotten about that whole Alpine thing. Totally. And then he said it and I was like, oh, yeah. It just seems like five lifetimes ago, right?
Yeah. And then this week I wrote down a quote from, I don't know who wrote the article because I couldn't find the byline. It just said that it had been updated. It was on WA Today, so it was the Nine Group, but there was a great quote in the article about the Formula One, and it's, I'm going to re-quote it. It said, Piastri gave every impression of chewing on lemons, which I think sums up his reaction. And just to recap, just, you know, we're talking about him being very angry and, you know, why was he angry? Well, he was given a 10-second penalty and 2 points on his super license for braking behind the safety car. And he braked. This is where I'm so conflicted. He did screw up. He screwed up, right? He braked hard. It was wet. It was rainy. Obviously, you need more braking distance when it's wet and rainy. There was a lot of spray. Max Verstappen had to take evading action. He didn't go off the track. He went in front of
Max. If you look back, Max didn't even turn. He was already on the side of Oscar and Max was accelerating. So look, I feel like that this penalty was
harsh, too harsh.
Like, I think maybe 5 seconds would be a fairer penalty for something like this.
Yeah,
particularly because it's not cut and dry. Like,
oh, it definitely wasn't dry.
It wasn't. The safety car was out because of the weather. It was so wet and the visibility was, I don't know how drivers can do 180, 250 kilometres around a track when they can't see a thing. Like, crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dangerous. So it was good that they just deployed the safety car for one of the stints because of visibility issues, because of the rain. A very harsh penalty, which Oscar lose the lead and Lando take the lead. Because the two McLarens, Oscar first, then Lando, were so far in front of the other field, it meant that Oscar could pit, serve his 10-second penalty and rejoin and be in second place still, which was something at least. But if it had been a 5-second penalty, he probably would have caught up to Lando and still taken the win.
Yes. Exactly. And could you imagine if it was the other way around, if it was Lando that got that penalty? God. And it would have been like World War III, probably IV, because we're almost in World War III. We could probably say we're in World War III at the moment. We would have been in World War IV if it had been the other way around. And just the anger and frustration. And there was, over the radio, Piastri had said something about wanting the place back. And out of context, it sounds really bratty, and it is really bratty. I'll admit that. It sounds really bratty, but he was working on the pretense that the penalty would be appealed, and he also knew before. He said this, again, it is quoted in articles. He said this in subsequent interviews, that he knew that the answer would be no before he even asked the question, but he was clinging on to a glimmer of hope there that he would get reinstated that position, which, in a way, like, again, reverse the roles. If that was Lando, he would have asked. The number of times he's asked for team orders or to be pitted first.
This is the first and only time that Oscar has asked for positions to be reversed or for the team to help with. I heard that and I thought that was really uncharacteristic of Oscar to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder whether he's being reduced to Lando's level out of desperation.
Yeah.
I don't know, but
that
it smelt of desperation.
Oh, it did.
Just hearing him ask that question. And, you know, he was doing everything he could to try and like you said, have a glimmer of hope to try and get back the lead, because the title fight is on, and it's on between those two teammates, Oscar and Lando, with Oscar currently just 8 points ahead of Lando in the Drivers' Championship after this weekend.
And I think the hardest thing to deal with in this whole scenario was that Oscar had control of that race with all the safety cars. Like we said, in the first 25 laps, it was wild. Through all the safety cars, through all the people spinning off, through all the people going off the track, through everything. At one point, he had a 15-second lead, and that got taken away with the second safety car, which is where he braked. So, you know, I think that is probably why he was so salty too, because he knew that he had such control over that race. He was racing like a master. And for it to be taken away with something so crappy.
Out of his control as well. Totally out of his control. Like, he did what he thought was okay to do. He'd done it at the last safety car restart, he said. Same thing, which is what he said. And for that to be penalised, which resulted in him losing the lead and the race. But you're right. Like, if it hadn't been a full safety car, if it had been a virtual safety car where everybody had to slow down to 40% of their race speed or drop 40% of their race speed, then, you know, he would have maintained
that lead.
But it didn't. It was a full safety car, all the cars, Constantina back. And, you know, he got a great start as well in wet conditions on a wet track, you know, with Max Verstappen, who took pole position in, like, quali. Wow. That was just a slap from Max Verstappen to take pole.
Yeah.
Like, credit where credit's due. That
absolutely
phenomenal drive from Max Verstappen.
Absolutely. Who managed to finish the race, I think, in sixth after spinning out after that restart. Uncharacteristically made an error, didn't hit anyone, but spun out and dropped right back to like 11th or something like that. He's such a, you know, he's such a controlled driver. And
it might not have been his error. It could have just been the conditions were so treacherous. And if tyres are going.
Yes, it could have been tyre track, you know, touching the accelerator too hard, too soon. But also, he wasn't focused on that restart. He was focused on telling race control that that was an illegal restart by Piastri. He had other things on his mind. And in those conditions, if you're not 100% focused, then you're not.
Yeah.
The whole situation, it makes me, like, I'm literally physically uncomfortable in my stomach thinking about the entire situation. And, you know, I don't want to take the joy of this win away from Lando, because he won his home race, and that is fantastic. Good on him. Great celebration. But at the same time, had this not have happened, would you have won it? Who knows? But
He wouldn't.
Diet hurts.
He would not have won it. No, it does hurt. It does hurt, because it does feel like that Oscar was robbed of a win in some ways, even if without the penalty, definitely robbed of the win. You know, if he'd been given a 5-second penalty, he probably still would have won it.
He'd have a fighting chance at least. And I think at least if you have a fighting chance, that's, you know, we could maybe sleep a little bit easier knowing Lando won when Oscar had a fighting chance. Yeah. And yes, we're biased. Of course we're biased. And I get that the British fans are biased, and they're probably going to hate us for what we're saying about Piastri. But, you know, let's all be friends. No harsh words between each other. Everyone has different opinions. And like I said, we're not taking away Lando's win from him. It just hurts us. That's all.
Yeah. good for Lando to win his home race, but I'm sure Lando would have preferred to have won it in other circumstances as well.
Oh, absolutely.
It is what it is. He's going to take it. Why wouldn't you? I would. So
exactly. Exactly.
So this could be Carlo Pinto's last race with Alpine. Don't know, but there's lots of juicy rumours flying around at the moment, which is why we love Formula One, all the drama and rumours and politics. And
as we've said before, rumors don't start out of nowhere. There is context behind rumors. So interesting rumors about drivers and where they might be going and who might be talking to who. I did see that there's been conversation between different team bosses about.
Okay.
Yeah. So I feel like we're going to see some really interesting moves in the next half of, well, this following half of the year.
I.e. Yeah, the summer break's usually the silly season, right? Yeah. So we've got that coming up soon. So I think there'll be lots of juicy gossip. But okay. The biggest rumor, yeah.
What? I was just going to say, predictions for silly season. Colapinto's gone. 100% my prediction.
Max moves to Mercedes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God, imagine.
I know. I can't imagine Mercedes letting go of George or Kimi because they've put in such big investments into both of those drivers, right? And George is performing. George is getting good. Right. And so is Kimi as a rookie.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see
how they manage that.
What happens. Yeah, that's right. But who will go into the Red Bull seat? Will it be Hadjar? Will it be someone else?
No one will want that seat. Who the hell wants that seat?
It's cursed, right? But it's like that's Max Verstappen's seat, which will mean that the whole probably team dynamic will change. The car setup and the car design will probably change because it won't be built around Max because he won't be there.
Mm.
Red Bull have got a new power unit next year, so they might be back markers for all we know, or they might, you know, regain championship lead with something astounding first time round. Who knows? Like it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got Cadillac joining next year as well. So there's lots of rumours about that. I've seen Mick Schumacher thrown in the mix for the Cadillac lineup.
Interesting. Bottas.
Yeah, Bottas. Yep. Valtteri, who I think wants the seat because he's posted that funny video of Cadillac saying, oh, this is a nice seat, you know.
Oh, there's no one in this, is there?
It was a great clip. So there's Bottas, but I've also heard Checo mentioned for Cadillac. So for the American kind of business and American audience, Checo being Mexican is a good shout. I've seen some reports that he's not interested at all in Cadillac and other reports saying he is interested in. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
We all have to give Checo so much more credit for his driving skills after seeing how that second seat has played out in Red Bull. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he was being looked at for future seats.
But who's going to take Colapinto's Alpine seat if this is, in fact, Colapinto's last race with Alpine?
Okay.
Will they put Jack Doohan back in or...?
So the things that I've read and seen is that there have been conversations between Toto Wolff and Flavio. So is it going to be
Bottas?
Thank you. I just, you know, mustache, mullet, why did I forget his name? Is it going to be Bottas? Like they've been chatting. Is it going to be Jack Doohan? Because Jack is their reserve driver. I can't wait for the summer break just for the silly season. I can wait because I don't want no races. I very much enjoy my weekends with races.
Touched on Max's outstanding lap, last lap of Q3, where he just put the car on pole position, just all seemingly out of nowhere.
Mm.
It was really good to see the Ferraris show some very competitive speed in the free practices. I mean, they were fastest in FP1, which, again, I don't hold too much weight in free practice because that's exactly what it is, our practice. So they're changing setups with the car, seeing what works on that track with what tyre and whatnot. So it's not always a reflection of, you know, poly or race day speed, but it was very encouraging to see the Ferraris show some good speed.
Yeah.
But Charles Leclerc.
He had a terrible race.
Well, after quali, I don't know if you saw that quote where it was just F, 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 I'm F and S. from what rhymes with pit. He was very, very self-deprecating and hating on himself after Quali, which was awful to see, actually. I didn't enjoy that.
No, not at all. And I know that there were a lot of radio calls over the course of the weekend about the cars being terrible. A lot of them came from Verstappen, which I always find so interesting because he was holding his position up there in second really, really well for a car that he was finding impossible to drive. His tyres were dead. I think they were saying it was a low downforce setup on inter tyres on a dry track was just like chewing up those tyres. So for him to keep saying like, my tyres are dead, this car's terrible, it's not turning, it's a, you know, to say that so many times and then to have done so well aside from that little spin, I think that's incredible. It was him and the two Ferrari drivers that were not so happy with their cars. Hamilton, good on him for managing to keep it together because Leclerc's strategy just let him down so much. It was just awful. And Alonso coming over the radio as well saying that, you know, because Stroll for a good amount of time there was looking like he was going to podium.
Yeah, exactly.
And Alonso was like, how do we always get my strategy so wrong? Like, don't mean to be rude to poor Stroll, but you know, for him to be looking at a podium position, like that was a damn good strategy.
They took a big risk with Stroll, didn't they? They brought him in, they put him on slicks.
Yeah.
As the track was drying, one of the first to do that with the view of rain coming in 10 laps, they'll change him back to inters. And that risk really paid off. Some others later in the race when they switched to slicks, that's why we saw so many people spinning out and going off track, and it was just so slippery and dangerous.
Yeah, it was pretty wild to see.
Let's move into travel. The British Grand Prix, Silverstone. So Silverstone is a race, yes, I've been to in my days working in F1 150 years ago when I was living in London. It was a really long time ago, and I remember sitting in traffic for a really long time getting to the track and leaving the track. Didn't rain that year. Britain as a whole is an epic. Like, I lived in London for 6 years, so I know. It's like a second home, the city. I love going back to London. I know which bus to catch. I know how the tube works. I know where my favourite pubs are. It really does.
It's London. Pubs are everywhere.
Yeah, that's true. It's really lovely.
Where would you stay around Silverstone?
Well, a lot of people camp. Those big aerial views of the race. They showed the campgrounds. So, and they, what did they call it?
Like Glastonbury.
Yeah. Some of the nearest, closer towns to Silverstone, you've got Buckingham, Towcester, Torchester. Sorry if I've butchered that. Northampton, Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
And some fans also stay in either Oxford or Birmingham.
Have you been to Northampton or Oxford or Birmingham?
Oxford, yes.
Okay.
Beautiful. Oxford's beautiful. Oxford University's there. Just think Harry Potter, like it's old worldly architect, Baroque architecture. It's grand. Oxford is really beautiful.
Sounds as fancy. It looks as fancy as it sounds.
Yeah, it really, it is. It's lovely. Birmingham, not fancy. I think Birmingham's come a long way since I lived in London. They do have a massive auto trade show in Birmingham. I think it's one of the biggest in the world. It's a commercial centre. It does have a university as well, Birmingham, but it doesn't have this sort of old world British charm that Oxford has and parts of London have.
Yeah. See, the closest I've ever got to Silverstone, I've been to London. They're kind of big city vibes and very kind of cool, modern, edgy, whereas you get out into places like, I presume, Oxford, and it is very like country life.
Yeah, I think Oxford is like I'm making a generalized statement here, but I know of very senior executives that are based in Oxford and take the train into London and commute into London. There's a fast train. I think they can do it in an hour or an hour and a bit into central London from Oxford.
Let's have a look. Very interesting. 51 minutes by train. Yeah, so that's actually not too bad, is it?
I guess if you're going to go to the British Grand Prix and if you're going to stay around Oxford, I would say make sure you go visit Bath. It is a beautiful medieval town. We're talking stone bridges over little brooks, greenery everywhere, trees, rolling hills. Bath was named because of all the Roman baths that are in Bath. Very beautiful. So, top place for visitors to check out.
Sure. And if you were going to go to Britain at any time, what would you eat?
You got to go to a pub for food and bangers and mash, sausages and mashed potato, pies, very British, Sunday roast, of course, very British, with Yorkshire pudding, which is not a pudding at all. It's like a
bread.
Baked bread.
The whole for gravy.
Yeah, exactly. With a, that you use to mop up gravy with, fish and chips, very British.
Yeah.
Curries are now becoming very British with the massive Indian population that are that lives in Great Britain, particularly around London.
And you can get great curries in London. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's interesting because I always find the British Grand Prix, like I kind of roll my eyes when we get around to it as far as like what am I going to cook, because I just, you know, it's not the most exciting cuisine to me.
No, it's not exciting. No, it doesn't. It's not French or Italian or Spanish or even
like Middle Eastern.
Exactly. There's nothing really exotic about English food.
No.
And it's been the joke of the culinary world for a really long time as being and bland.
Yeah.
But in fact, a really good Sunday roast with all the trimmings is what? I mean, it's hard to beat that. It is a beautiful meal.
See, I could beat that any day. I've never liked roast. I don't know if it's because, like, I have these childhood memories of really dry, really lamby lamb roasts. I'm not a big red meat eater either. I mean, don't get me wrong. Love a great pork roast with great crackling. But just a little bit of pork, and then I don't know, roast veggies. I think.
Oh, I love roast veggies.
Capsicum, red onion.
Yeah, roast capsicum's beautiful. Yeah. Roasted red onion, beautiful.
But roast just to me is not it. And then, you know, I say that I get bored by British cuisine. But I don't know. I feel like British cuisine gets a really bad rap. It's not like you can get really good bangers and mash, but one of my favorite is cottage pie, which is basically just like mince. Worcestershire sauce. And it's like a really rich beef mince pie topped with mashed potato and melted cheese. And I love it because I love putting extra vegetables in everything, and it's basically like a big stew. And so I end up with more vegetable than meat in there. And it's just so good because you can freeze it. You can, the leftover is better day two, like curries, like most stews.
Lasagna.
Yeah, it's better day two. So this was my choice for this year. Last year I did bangers and mash, but bless Espen, I asked him to go buy some sausages for the bangers and mash last year. And he came back with like, I think he came back with chorizo sausages. Because he was thinking about delicious, yummy sausages that he likes to eat. And I was like, oh, honey, no, I can't put gravy on that. I can't have like an onion, what do you call it? The onion that you cook down. I can't have caramelized onion with chorizo. Like, it's just not right. So we ended up with this really awful, like, hodgepodge of a meal. You know, bless him. Normally, the chorizo sausages would have been fine if we were having salad. But anyway, so this year I went with the cottage pie because I know it's a winner in our household. You know, Espen loves meat and potatoes like a lot of men. And it means that I have extra meals for the week so I don't have to cook. So
One thing I will say about British cuisine, and one thing that I think they do really well, is the full English breakfast.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Agree, but also disagree, because I find a full English breakfast just way too much. I also hate baked beans, which is an essential part of a full British breakfast, right?
Yeah, it is.
And that's like, it is so typically British and you can't not have it. Scones and jams and cream, jam and cream, cannot get any better than that. I will not lie. Proper, good, clotted cream with a good strawberry jam. And oh my God, now I want scones.
Yeah, so there is some good things about British cuisine. We won't hate on it. Yeah, totally.
To all the naysayers who think that British cuisine is really boring, I mean, you know, I said that I roll my eyes about it when it comes around, but it's actually, you know, there are some really great things that have come out of Great Britain.
So just to recap on the British Grand Prix, massively, hugely exciting race that was under safety car for a big chunk of the race due to torrential weather. It was a wet, dry kind of race with lots of tyre changes in from inters to slicks back to inters. Finishing up was Lando Norris on first, Oscar Piastri in second, thanks to a time penalty. So the two McLarens won two. Then some 35 seconds behind was Nico Hülkenberg with his first podium in the Kick Sauber. Then Lewis Hamilton in the Ferrari in fourth. Max Verstappen finished fifth. Stellar effort for him, given his dramas on track, spinning and whatnot, and just complaining about difficulty driving the car. Pierre Gasly in sixth in the Alpine. Lance Stroll, Aston Martin finished in seventh. A great result for Lance Stroll. Alex Albon in eighth in the Williams and Fernando Alonso ninth in the other Aston Martin, and George Russell rounds out the top 10 in Mercedes.
Well done to them all. And then next week, we don't have a race.
No, we've got a week off and then we've got Spa. So yeah, very exciting.
Yeah.
Race after the next one will be Spa. Mon, do you want to give some race predictions?
For Spa, no, I don't want to do race predictions, darling. I thought this was such a good idea, but I hate doing them because I just hate. Do you know what? I'm going to do a Flavio Briatore and just throw an entire bunch of darts at a dartboard and hope something sticks. And I'm going to go Piastri because he damn well deserves a win after the last two races where it didn't go his way. So I'm going to go Oscar Piastri. I'm going to throw in... I'm going to throw in Verstappen because I reckon he'll be really angry. And then I'm going to throw in, let's just go with Russell for a bit of fun. There we go. That's my predictions. Not very thought out.
Piastri, Verstappen, Russell.
Yes.
Okay. I am going to say, I'm going to throw some wild cards out there as well. I'm going to say Piastri, Hamilton, Lando.
You can tell we both hate doing this. Why do we do this to ourselves? We're both like, fun. Anyway, on that note, if you guys really enjoyed listening to this week's episode, any of the previous episodes, any of the upcoming episodes that you haven't listened to but you know you're gonna love, you can leave us a review or a rating on all your favorite podcast listening apps. You can also find us on YouTube and you can give us a like there, give us a follow. If you're into social media, head on over to Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or TikTok. We're also there. And our email address is andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com.
Excellent. Well, so good to have you back, Mon. Thank you very much. And thank you guys for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.